How real is Ceaușescu's claim to be running an independent foreign policy?
Romania does not have an independent policy. I should say that the Romanian president Nicolae Ceaușescu was the first leader in Eastern Europe to understand that his country cannot survive and cannot avoid its own people appraisal without Western political support, money, and technology. In order to gain this Western support, Nicolae Ceaușescu tried to sell something. Independence was the name of his game in the beginning of 1970s, and it was based on the Western eagerness to encourage every single sign of independence within the Soviet bloc.
Have Western leaders been duped by this propaganda about Romania's independent mind?
When I broke with Bucharest in 1978, the 20 million people of Romania got almost $20 billion credit from the West. Is that saying something?
What's the purpose of the strategy of stealing Western technology?
You know, the Romanian president had a theoretical principle. It's moral to steal from the proletarian mortal enemy, and it's much cheaper to steal than to buy from the West.
What scale was this stealing carried on? Was it systematic stealing?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I should say that during the last years, my last years in the Romanian Foreign Intelligence Service, there were two main sides of its activity. First was technological intelligence, and the second was the manipulation of Western opinions. The whole size of the Romanian intelligence service was increased 3 times, with its effectives divided into these two main directions.
Could you give perhaps one or two examples of particular types of technology that was stolen?
Sure. For instance, during the 70s, Romania was among the last in the Warsaw Pact in stealing Western military technology. By the time of my break with Bucharest, Romania was among the first three. One example, the alloy, the very hard alloy developed by the United States for cosmic and military rockets. Another example, microelectronics for military use, which was received with great enthusiasm by Moscow. On the other side, Romania organized a total espionage against the West, stealing whatever could find. I would say that by the time of my break with Bucharest, espionage became the most important component of the Romanian economy.
Could you give some examples to illustrate Ceaușescu's cult of personality?
What about Scânteia, Romania's main newspaper, having its first page dedicated to Ceaușescu day after day? The second page was more or less dedicated to his wife, Elena. The Romanian TV was basically a ode to Ceausescu's day-to-day activity. In schools, Ceausescu's speeches were the main subject of their education.
Has this cult of personality, does it now include Elena Ceausescu as well? Is she often involved in that?
Yeah, I should say that now Romania is a country, a family-owned country, in which Nicolae Ceausescu is a president, Elena Ceausescu is a first deputy prime minister, in fact, the one who runs the government. Nicu Ceausescu, their son, is the Minister of Youth. The three of them are members of the Romanian equivalent of the Politburo. Nicolae Ceausescu's brother, Ilie, is running the Ministry of Defense. Nicolae Ceausescu's other brother, Nicolae is his name also, is running part of the security forces. And the rest of Ceausescu's relatives and Elena's relatives are in charge of different other parts, but significant part of the Romanian economical or cultural life.
Does Ceausescu believe in communism, and what does he think it is?
Yes, he does. He is a fanatic communist. He truly believes in communism. Also, looking at his residences, looking at his personal wealth, one may say that he believes in communism, but he wants it not for himself, for others.
Does he have a personal bank account? Does he have private money of his own?
Yes, he does. In my book, Red Horizon, I showed a few aspects of his personal bank accounts in Romania and abroad.
What is roughly the size of his fortune?
It's difficult to say. According to my knowledge, the part I knew was around $400 million.
Could you describe his personality and Elena's personalities and their general style of living?
Speaking about Ceausescu, I would emphasize three main things. The first, as I said, he's a fanatic Marxist, and this made Romania the country with the most orthodox Marxist domestic policy. The second is that Ceausescu owes his political career to Moscow. His only graduate course is a political course in Moscow. The third is his personal devotion to Marxism. About Elena, I always compare Elena with Imelda Marcos or Michel Duvalier. And I think that there are basically two differences between she and these two other leaders. First, Elena is not as cute as Imelda or Michel Duvalier. And she tried to compensate playing the woman of science. She used her influence for collecting scientific titles and medals. The second is that she is a communist. That's the second difference. She is a communist but as her husband. She likes communists for others, not for herself.
Could you give us some examples of the extravagant lifestyle of the Ceausescus?
For instance, some residents at the Black Sea in a town called Neptune, which is dedicated to the presidential family. Winter residence in Predeal, and a new winter residence in Sinaia in the previous royal palace. The royal palace became a museum, and after 15 years of being a museum, was transformed into Nicolae Ceausescu's winter residence. Spring residence in Snagov, near Bucharest. Personal yacht received as a personal present from King Hussein. I described the story in Red Horizons.
Could you actually tell us about that fact?
It happened in 1975 when Nicolae Ceausescu made an official visit to Jordan. The king invited the Romanian president and his wife to his personal house at the Red Sea. Nicolae Ceausescu took me with them. There was a nice sunny day. King Hussein took us on his personal yacht. In the afternoon, returned to their homes. In the evening, a closed door meeting between the Romanian president, his wife, and myself. I want this yacht, is what I heard. So their desire was sent to King Hussein, who in a very nice way apologized. He said, "This is the yacht. I got it from my wife. I can't give it to you, but I can order a new one." What about friendship, its name? 1 year later, I was in charge of he taking this boat from Istanbul to Bucharest and became their personal yacht. 1978, their last visit to the United States. I had many tasks. I prepared this visit. I came with the president to the United States. I had many tasks, but one was presents for Elena Ceausescu. For instance, fur coat was a key word, as pearls was a key word during some other visit to Japan.
Could you explain the mechanics of arm twisting people, pressurizing people to give her presence in a specific case, in the fur coat case, for example?
You know, was very different from country to country. In Western Europe, it's much easier because people are used to giving presents. There was enough to give the idea. For instance, during their visit to West Germany, cars was the idea, and they got. They got Mercedeses for themselves. They got Audi car for their son Nico. They got a lot of car from every single big company they visited. In the United States, it was a little bit more difficult because the custom is different. When I let the Texas Instrument Management know that Elena would be very happy to get a Minkot, by the end of the visit, the reaction was to leak the whole story to the press. So the ways are different. The results are different also.
Could you tell us about Ceausescu's private wine?
It's called Yellow, and it's yellow. Produced in a very small quantity. It's his only wine. He drinks his home. He drinks his abroad. He has a personal waiter whose main job is to carry his bottles of wine. Nobody has a right to try, to taste, to use, to touch this wine in Romania. When he has guests, he has his wine, and he has another wine for his guests.
And the clothes, tell us about his clothes.
I want to say something. In 1978, I prepared Nicolae Ceausescu's visit to London. And then I went with Ceausescu there. There was a big dinner organized by the British Queen. There was a dinner organized by Ceausescu. At his dinner, he had his wine in his glass and another wine for the Queen and for her husband.
Can you tell us about his clothes?
Since he learned from Fidel Castro about some CIA's attempts to poison him. I was there when he learned. Nicolae Ceausescu changed his rules about his personal clothes. Brief, one suit, wore once, burnt, never used again.
Can you tell us about how Romania sells people, Ceausescu's own anti-Semitism?
You know, for many, relatively many years, Romania became more and more known in the West as a country who started to liberalize its emigration, especially emigration of Jews and emigration of German born in Romania. I was in the middle of this whole immigration process. And I should say that the rule was that nobody could emigrate unless was paid for. There were secret, and when I say secret, I mean it, very secret agreements between Bucharest and Tel Aviv, between Bucharest and Bonn, establishing the price per head of people allowed to emigrate. It is not easy to believe that in our century you can find a government selling people as slaves. But that's the truth about the trumpeted Romanian policy about liberalizing immigration.
What's Ceausescu's own personal view of Jews?
Anti-Semitism. No, 40 years, more than 40 years after the Holocaust, Romania is a country where anti-Semitism is its national policy. I want to tell a few examples. I had the order to fire, to clean the Foreign Intelligence Service of every single Jew. One very good intelligence officer, his name was Bickel, was fired because his wife was adopted by a Jewish family. That was the depth of anti-Semitism in Romania. The army, the most important levels of the Romanian army, armed forces, were also clean, if I may use this word, of youth.
What privilege are open to members of the ruling elite? What privileges?
Let me tell about myself. In order to buy food, was enough to call, and I got everything delivered home. Villas for summer, villas for spring, special hospital, normal people, most of them, they are two in a bed in Romanian normal hospitals. Two cars, two drivers. I was not at the highest level of the hierarchy. The higher was your level, the darkest was the color of your car. Mine was just navy blue.
How controlled by the Securitate is life in Romania in general?
I should say without making mistake that Romanian security forces were able to know in proportion of probably 70, maybe more percent, what the Romanian people think, to know their intimate life and to act for influencing their intimate life or to neutralize it if it was considered hostile.
Could you tell us roughly what the size of the Securitate force is?
I would say that altogether it's 1 to 15. One security officer and agent for every 15 Romanian people.
Do they have their own troops, even the security?
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. They do. They have their own troops in charge of the security of the Romanian president. And that's its only job.
Can you tell me about Ceausescu's plan to monitor the whole population, the entire population, through the telephone system?
Sure. It was in 1978 when the Romanian president made a visit to a exposition organized by Securitate. Its thema was monitoring the population. Its goal was that in 5 years, the whole Romanian population be monitored. The main instrument presented to the Romanian president at this exposition was a new type of telephone. The telephone had different faces, different colors, different shapes. The inside of the telephone was the same one. It was the telephone who worked as a microphone anytime it was not used as a telephone. I mean, anytime the telephone was on hook, became a microphone.
And where were they going to be placed, these telephones?
The only Romanian telephone to everybody, Romanian and foreigners. This telephone was conceived to give the Romanian Securitate the ability to switch a switch, if I may say so, and to listen to everybody's house. Prior to this, they had to go through very, very difficult procedures in order to install, to conceal microphones in somebody's house. Even in Romania, was not an easy job. Now, once his telephone installed everywhere, replacing the normal telephone, there was no problem, supposed to be no problem, in listening, in monitoring every single house who had such a telephone. It doesn't matter if it was the house of a Romanian citizen or the house of a foreigner.
Can you give me an example of when Ceausescu received letters abusing him, how he tried to
There were thousands There were thousands.
Could you tell us about
anonymous that? Letters. Anonymous letters was a rule in Romania. Ceaușescu wanted the scalp of the writers, and evidently was not an easy job. His order was that Securitate built a huge archive of handwriting samples. By the time I broke with Bucharest, I should say that around 50% of the Romanian active population had handwriting samples there. On the other hand, he ordered to have a huge collection of every single typewriters. By the time I broke with Bucharest, was just the beginning of collecting these samples. A couple of years later, a presidential decree established the rule that every single typewriter should be registered with the Milicia, that's the name of the police there. And this gave Bucharest Securitate the capability of having sample of every single typewriter used in that country. I think it's the only country in Europe which was able to put together these two collections, handwriting samples and typewriters.
Are there political prisons and prisoners in Romania?
I would say theoretically not. The law, the written law was we don't have political prison. The unwritten law was if you have a political enemy, try to neutralize him, to arrest him as an ordinary criminal. Use your imagination. That was a broken record, the motto between Securitate. Use your imagination. If you cannot find anything better, was what the chief of Securitate said, just slip a chocolate bar in his pocket while he is in a grocery store, and this will give you the opportunity to have to put him in jail. Once in jail, it's yours.
And how long would people be stay in jail for sometimes?
You know, enough to be neutralized, enough to be irradiated, enough to be changed from a political adversary, if you want, into somebody which doesn't represent any danger.
Tell us about how they use radiation.
I don't know how they use radiation, but radiation was used in jails. Yeah, everything was received from Moscow. Was Andropov was the chief of the Soviet KGB at that time, and the use of radiation became a very, very secret practice within the Soviet bloc, generated by Yuri Andropov.
And prisoners were put in cells,
yeah,
where they were irradiated.
Yeah.
Could you tell us about the Jew Valley strike and how Ceaușescu responded to it?
Yeah, I was there when the Romanian president learned about the strike. And I was there when the Romanian president decided how to deal with this strike. To make a very long story short, the leader of the strikes were identified using agents and electronic monitoring. After they were identified, they were hospitalized in psychiatric hospitals or transferred in different corners of Romania. I want to say that the Jiu Valley strike was a turning point in Romania's domestic policy. Because after this strike, Romanian President Ceaușescu gave the order that the whole Romanian population be electronically monitored. So I don't want to have another Jiu Valley.
Have Nicolae and Elena Ceaușescu personally ordered attacks on people, the deaths of individuals, even outside Romania?
You know, in Red Horizons, I gave quite a few examples by names. I want to add to this list the fact that, for instance, my publisher, Al Regnery, was threatened that he will be killed and I will be killed if he will publish the book. I want to say that, as I learned, Radio Free Europe was threatened in the same way if they will broadcast chapters from Red Horizons. And I want to say that, as I understood, Bucharest is spreading the idea that they are working to kill myself. It does not matter in which corner of the United States.
And do you know of people that have been killed in places like the United States on the orders of Ceaușescu?
I know people killed outside the United States, in the West, and I described these cases in Red Horizons. One was a priest. You know, the killing was not the old-fashioned way of killing. Go in somebody's face and shoot him. One was killed under the simulation of a car accident. The wheel of his cars were unscrewed. And he ended his life in a tree in West Germany. No, some other were beaten, terribly beaten. The idea was to be beaten as bad that he won't be able to speak and to write anymore for the rest of his life. And there were such cases. I want to say that a previous Romanian prime minister, Ion Gheorghe Maurer, who is a lawyer specialized in international law, he repeatedly told Nicolae Ceaușescu, he said, "Nicu, you are the president of Romania. You can do everything you want. Please, don't give order to kill. If a king gives the order to kill, he is still a criminal. Don't do that." He played a role. And for a time, the orders were just beat him. But from time to time, orders to kill were given.
What does Ceaușescu think of the proletariat, the workers of Romania?
You know, I would say that, trying to be short, people in Romania are numbers. No more than numbers.
And has he expressed open contempt of the workers to you in your presence? Have you heard him say things denigrating you?
He used to say, they have one single job, to work harder and longer.
Why have there been more rebellions and opposition to this insane rule?
There are many reasons, but I think that we should take in account the fact that because of its limited size, in square miles and number of people, Romania became one of the probably first Soviet bloc countries able to monitor almost its whole population, which is not practically possible in the Soviet Union. It's practically possible in Romania. Romanian Securitate knows almost every single wheel turning among the population, and they can maneuver the population. They can manipulate people's opinion, or if need is, they can neutralize it. Among others, Romania Securitate has the task to present the president weekly bulletins about the public opinion. And there are in very short synthesis every important thing they learned from the male censorship, the microphones, and the telephone monitors. And this is the fundament of the Romanian domestic policy.
What damage has Ceausescu's rule done to Romania, in your view?
I should start saying that Romania was a country who once exported grains and oil. Romania now imports grain and oil. I should say that years ago, Romania's capital, Bucharest, was called Le Petit Paris. Now, the temperature in houses was just raised from 40 to 50 degrees during the winters. That means in private homes and in public homes, including hospitals. And I should say that Romania is one of the very few countries in the world where food is rationed. I think this is the way, the economic way of the Ceausescu's age. On the other way, I would say that Ceausescu's era killed a whole generation of Romanians. You know, I was born in a free Romanian as a free man. But millions of people were born in a Romania around which Ceausescu built a political Berlin Wall. I would say that, and I hope that history will confirm, that Ceausescu's age, which he calls the golden era of Romania, is the blackest age in Romanian history. You know, you would expect from a fellow who here in the West is called defector, you would expect from him to have harsh words against the government he defected. I needed 10 whole years here in the United States. And I waited for these 10 years in order to be able to see today's Romania with American eyes, with Western eyes, in order to measure Romania with our Western measurement. And I would say that the fellow who talks to you now is not the one who defected in 1978. It's an American who tries to see the life, the people there with our Western eye. That's what I see now.
Can communism work?
I would say that during my 27 years in the most secret position in the Romanian government, the most important thing I learned is that communists can never, ever work, even with help received or stolen from the West, even with terror at home, could never, ever work. That's my lifelong conclusion. I would say that you may want to ask me why. And it's not easy to say why in a few words, but I would say just that two things. Communism is an ideology that ignores the most important natural human desire, freedom. And communism is a it's a ideology who ignores people themselves. You know, history, every single kind of history was made by people. Communism does not have people, has numbers.
Thank you. I'm glad I let you say that. Thank you very much.
Welcome.
That was absolutely, I mean, yeah, well...